Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Matt Peck, also host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago, following every Bulls game this season. You can follow me on Twitter at Bulls_Peck. You can follow my co-host Jordan Malley at Jordan C. Malley, and you can follow us at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Send us an email, LockedOnBulls@gmail.com. And of course, that text and voicemail line always there for you, our fellow Bulls fans, 331-979-1369. That number again, 331-979-1369. Any and all of your Bulls thoughts, questions, concerns, send them our way, and we'll get to as much of it as we can in our weekly mailbag episodes. Missed an episode yesterday, and apologies for that, but seeing as how yesterday was our usual Wednesday mailbag, I thought I would take some mailbag content at the back end of today's show after giving you some of my biggest takeaways from this win over the Memphis Grizzlies last night, their second win over Memphis this season, and their second win in a row. Cue the party music. Pop the champagne. Ladies and gentlemen, the Bulls have their first winning streak of the 2019-20 season. Oh, how low the bar is. My goodness. So, look, a couple of different, trends continuing in this game last night. Zach LaVine playing well, obviously, is the biggest takeaway and the biggest trend in his string of games since his 49-point outburst in their miraculous win over Charlotte. He's averaging like 30, 31 points, still shooting above 50% from the field and from the three-point line. Obviously, some of that weighted heavily factored in that 49-point game. But still, he's followed that juggernaut performance up with a lot of respectable ones, and he was good again last night. 25 points on 7 of 13 from the field. The big thing that I liked about Zach's game last night is that he got to the free throw line. I thought there were a couple of no calls that maybe a more respected player and or all-star would have gotten, and that's been an issue for Zach last season and into this season. He still doesn't really seem to have the respect of NBA officials when he drives and creates contact. But he did get to the free throw line 11 times last night. And I think that if this Bulls team is going to find any semblance of consistent winning, or at least being competitive, it has to include Zach LaVine shooting 10 or more free throws every night. I think that is a must. So it was nice to see that. And then, of course, the other big factor of Zach's game last night is that he successfully closed this game. And that's something that Jordan and I have talked about in this rebuilding era. And it was a huge problem last season, and we've seen it be a problem so far this season. Can Zach LaVine be a reliable closer down the stretch of close games? Obviously, he proved that he could do it in the Charlotte game, because that was like a Herculean effort. It was a one-man effort, and it was a response to him being pissed off because his coach unjustly benched him the game before. But we've seen the bad version of Zach. We know what the bad version of Zach is late in games. Unforced turnovers, dribbling the ball off his foot, or, trying to make passes that are not in his wheelhouse and they're ill-advised and he turns the ball over. Or he takes and misses bad shots. We've seen that version of Zach as we try to answer the question, can Zach LaVine be good enough to be a closer on a good team and a guy to build around? And the response and, you know, the results so far of that test have been, that experiment have been, you know, wishy-washy at best. But this was a game that the Bulls coughed up a big lead yet again. They were up 22 points, their biggest lead of the night, and brought a 14-point lead into the fourth quarter. And a Jay Crowder corner three suddenly cut the Bulls' lead to one. And Jim Boylan calls timeout. And the Bulls regain a little bit of composure. And out of that timeout, you had Zach LaVine making a three, Zach LaVine making a two, Zach LaVine dishing an assist to Chris Dunn, who miraculously made one of like the two threes he's made all season. He was actually 2 of 4 last night, so those are the two that he made this season. And then also closed it out at the free throw line. And there were no head-scratching, you know, punch-yourself-in-the-face dumb turnovers like we have seen from Zach in late-game scenarios and close-game scenarios in the past. So coupled with stringing another good performance on top of this recent upswing from LaVine after he's had his tough start to this season, it was about his ability to close last night that was, you know, the most relieving part about that game. Because at some point, the Bulls have to be able to rely on him consistently to close games. And this team, it appears, is not good enough, just flat out not good enough, to put away bad teams in the third quarter, where they can, you know, give their starters, you know, the back end of a night off and let the mop-up duty bench close out a game because it is too far out of reach. We saw what happened against the Lakers. We saw what nearly happened against Sacramento on Monday night. And we have seen the Bulls come out on the losing end of a lot of games already that they should have won. So, in that sense, you like what you saw from Zach last night, but it is still frustrating that this team seems incapable of blowing out a bad team. I guess the first step towards becoming a relevant, semi-competitive team is beating the bad teams. Obviously, the next step would be blowing out the bad teams and competing with evenly and sometimes beating other teams who are, like yourself, mediocre. But apparently, based on what we've seen so far and an 8-14 record, the Bulls are not there yet. The Bulls are not yet to a point where they can blow out a bad team and have a W in the bank by the time you get to the fourth quarter. Because I sarcastically was tweeting about it last night, and it seemed like most everybody who was responding was right where my train of thought was, which was, okay, the Bulls are bringing a 14-point lead into the fourth quarter. Let's see which new way or creative way they can figure out blowing this lead and coughing up a game that they should win. Because that's the biggest trend this season. Losing winnable games to bad teams. So it's not snark and it's not cynicism. And it's, you know, it's not like you're rooting to see these losses. Unless, you know, you're a part of the fan base who believes that you pile up enough bad losses to bad opponents and there will be a Jim Boylan firing, but I don't think that's coming. So, no, I'm not rooting for losses at this point. And at 8-14, it would be great if the Bulls could figure some things out and turn this around, because it is not too late. Especially with how weak the East is. However, it is not a good sign, in my opinion, that once again, the Bulls coughed up all but 1 point of a 22-point lead to a bad team that was missing some of its key pieces, namely rookie phenom Ja Morant, and their other rookie who has had some solid contributions this season, Brandon Clark. It's the same thing as coughing up a lead and almost losing to the Kings, who were playing without De'Aaron Fox and Marvin Bagley. Yeah. You got your first winning streak of the season at 2 wins, and it took you games 21 and 22 to get there against bad teams missing their key pieces. Congratulations. So, you know, they have a potential 3-win streak on their, you know, on the horizon here as they get ready to play the Warriors for the second time in the span of, you know, a week or so on Friday night. And the Warriors obviously are a shorthanded team, and they blew out the Bulls, essentially, the first time these teams met. And it looks like they'll have D'Angelo Russell back this time around, who didn't even play. And the Bulls got blown out by that Warriors team. That is the team with the fewest wins in the league and was actively already trying to tank and beat the Bulls. So if they manage to win this time around against Golden State, which I have no faith in, why would you have the faith in the Bulls doing anything these days? And it's three wins in a row? What do you want? What do you want, John Paxson? Jim Boylan, you want us to throw you a parade for beating three bad teams in a row? No. The Bulls have failed to capitalize on an incredibly soft opening to their 1920 calendar. And I am still more disgusted than I am encouraged. You could talk about what it has been to deal with the absence of Otto Porter Jr. Or you could talk about Lauri Markkanen being a shadow of his former self so far this season. And we're talking optimistically about maybe Lauri turning things around because he followed up a 20-point game with a 15-point game. And we're trying to turn that into a positive. That's how bad he's been. So, no, I'm not crowning them for beating the Kings and the Grizzlies in consecutive games, and I won't crown them for anything if they beat the Warriors and win three in a row. You haven't earned any credit as a unit. Certain individuals, mostly Zach LaVine, have earned some credit individually for their performances that have gotten them at least a couple of wins in games that they theoretically should win. You know, good for you. But there's nothing encouraging to me about this two-game winning streak. Let's see what happens when they start to play actual NBA teams again. And if they can go from a team that ekes out wins to bad teams when they should be blowing them out, coughing up big leads to bad teams when they should be blowing them out, and actually winning games handily and then actually competing against teams that don't suck. Because most games so far this season, other than being ahead and coughing up a lead to the Lakers, when the Bulls face a real team, they get outclassed from the first minute to the last minute. And I don't see anything about that changing anytime soon. Just a reminder before we get to our mailbag content for today that if you are a diehard Chicago sports fan through and through across the board, whether you're a Northsider or a Southsider, the Locked On Podcast Network has the shows for you. In addition to us here at Locked On Bulls, Bears fans should check out Locked On Bears with Lauren Cox. Bears have a big, hugely important game Thursday night football tonight against the Cowboys hosting at Soldier Field. The Bears have the slimmest of playoff chances still alive. They got to win out, and they need some help from other teams in the NFC. But tonight's game against Cowboys is literally a win-or-go-home game for the Bears this season. Check out Locked On Bears. Locked On Blackhawks with Jay Zawoski of 670 The Score. His colleague over at 670, Herb Lawrence, recently taking over at Locked On White Sox, the newest addition to the Locked On Chicago family. And, of course, my guy, Sean Sears, doing great things for Locked On Cubs. For all of you baseball fans intrigued by what's going on with the winter meetings, there's some trade rumors going on both sides of town. Check out Locked On Cubs, Locked On White Sox, the whole family of Locked On Chicago podcasts. So then, moving into our mailbag for today. Let's kick it off with a text from the 309. I don't know what's more frustrating to watch. Zach LaVine shooting unnecessary threes and ruining the flow of the offense, or watching Dunn take threes, or watching Dunn take three seconds, judging if he should shoot it or not, and when he does, it is a brick. Does someone want to tell Dunn he's a defensive specialist and not Kyle Korver? Great text. Thanks for checking in. Look, to me, you don't know what's more frustrating? I clearly know what's more frustrating. And it's Chris Dunn continuing to shoot these threes And I think at the instruction of his head coach, Jim Boylan, because we've heard Boylan's comments about encouraging Dunn to continue shooting these threes when he is wide open, which he is all the time. And he is wide open all the time because the dude is not even shooting 20% from behind the three-point line. He is not a threat. There is a reason that he is so wide open. Does Zach LaVine take the occasional, ill-timed three-pointer, the misguided three-pointer? Yes. But he's a dude who's also currently in a stretch of five or six games where he's shooting above 50% from behind the three-point line. It is a real weapon in Zach LaVine's offensive arsenal. And yes, this Bulls team as a whole looks better when the ball is moving. And that's one of the big reasons why I have really appreciated the recent uptick in Satoransky's play. That's why I still was insisting, despite his sluggish start, that he was the best person to play with Zach and the rest of that starting unit. We're seeing his numbers go up with his assists. He had 8 more assists last night. The ball moves better. He uses his floor vision to find good looks for guys. And sometimes Zach LaVine playing hero ball interrupts that. But sometimes we need Zach LaVine playing hero ball because he's the only guy on this roster capable of doing it. So if you're asking me what frustrates me more, the occasional, poor decision three from Zach or Chris Dunn chucking up bricks, the answer to that question is obvious. And, the whole defensive specialist thing, Chris Dunn gets you maybe 2 steals a game. But he gives you, he is, in my opinion, still a net negative because of his offense. We've started to see him do a little bit more. He was in there late in the Sacramento game. Jim decided to close with him. And he was running some pick and roll stuff in addition to Zach being the guy late in that game. But between the missed threes, still not being very strong, finishing at the rim, and in my opinion, still making some head-scratching mistakes and turnovers when he is the one handling the ball. Look, you can't compare being frustrated by Zach LaVine and being frustrated by Chris Dunn right now. I know, and I'm not giving Zach LaVine a pass defensively. He still struggles as an off-ball defender. His on-ball defense this season has been pretty good. It's been decent. But Zach giving you what he gives you offensively so far exceeds the takeaway of his defensive deficiencies as opposed to the opposite with Chris Dunn, in my opinion. There is no question. Chris Dunn needs to stop shooting threes because teams will keep letting him and he will keep missing them. The 724. Hey, guys, it's Ken from Pittsburgh, Bulls lifer. But when the hell is this front office going to man up and grow a set of balls and admit they messed up and fire Boylan? Even my young son said that Boylan sucks as a coach. It's frustrating to have high hopes for this team coming into the season and have and I gave him a chance. I gave Boylan a chance, but he ain't it. Thanks for checking in, Ken. Look, I understand your frustration. I think that if the Bulls had conducted a thorough coaching search and hired somebody better and somebody from outside this organization instead of a assistant who essentially stole Fred's job from him, that a different coach might be doing more with this talent. And that's putting it lightly because, I don't feel like it is a might. I feel like it is a certainty that a different coach with ideally some previous head coaching experience and a better mind for the X's and O's of basketball instead of being I coach with my heart and my gut guy like Jim Boylan would be getting more out of this collection of talent than Jim Boylan is right now. To me, there is no question about that. But as for when the front office is going to man up and admit they made a mistake on this guy, I think I said this on a recent show, that's the day that John Paxson also hands in his resignation. Because we know the loyalty and the bonds that exist between Jerry Reinsdorf, who, yes, is just a figurehead at this point, but still has the final say, and John Paxson. We know that bond is essentially unbreakable. and that Jerry Reinsdorf will never fire John Paxson. And John Paxson is a prideful guy. We know this. I know this based on the people I talk to who know John well. And we know this based on the way he conducts himself with the media. He is a prideful guy, and he does not want to fail at this rebuild. But we have heard that if this rebuild doesn't work, it might be the last. But that Paxson would have to be the one who comes to the Reinsdorfs to say, it's time, I resign, instead of them firing him. But if you fire Jim Boylan, who a year ago, almost to the day a year ago, they told us, we're disappointed in our poor start. We see some habits forming with our young core players that we don't like. We see a locker room mentality and an on-the-court mentality that is sluggish and soft, and we feel like we need a disciplinarian to come in here and right the ship. That's why we're firing Fred, and that's why we're replacing him with head coach Jim Boylan. Not interim coach Jim Boylan, head coach Jim Boylan. They told us that that was the fix that needed fixing. Jim Boylan is going to fix this. And we all said, I don't know about that. But most of us who, you know, have some semblance of a heart said, all right, you know what? We're going to give Jim Boylan a pass for the most part on grading his coaching ability when he's missing key players due to injury and is trotting out a G League roster that's essentially tanking on purpose for the majority of his tenure since taking over for Fred. And there was a glimpse of solid basketball in there for a while when you got Otto in the trade and Lowry and Zach were both playing well. So between that and the G League garbage around it, we said, all right, let's wait until next season to judge Jim Boylan the coach. Well, it's next season, and all of our fears were legitimate because Jim Boylan can't coach his way out of a paper bag. And if John Paxson fires Jim Boylan because it is apparent that this dude can't coach his way out of a paper bag, and while failing to coach his way out of a paper bag, is essentially alienating himself from his entire roster of players who, when you see on the TV with your eyeballs, that during timeouts, Jim's players want nothing to do with him. Nothing to do with him. They are out on this guy. And the wins that they're scraping together against bad teams, they are doing it solely because of performances of the players and not because of Jim's coaching. So if John Paxson admits all of that and says, Jim ain't it. He is admitting guilt for doing just the dumbest possible thing in giving Jim Boylan not only that job, but that extension without even conducting a fucking coaching search first. It is so egregiously terrible, that decision that John Paxson made. And yes, he had support from ownership. And maybe ownership, from what we've heard, was pushing for Jim Boylan to be that guy. But John is the one. John is the one running this organization right now from a basketball decision standpoint. Michael runs the business. John runs the basketball. And keeping and extending Jim Boylan right now looks like one of the worst basketball decisions that this regime under John Paxson, which has had plenty of bad basketball decisions, this looks like one of the worst. Keeping this guy and doubling down on this guy. So if you admit that the Jim Boylan experiment was a mistake and it needs to end, you are essentially admitting that you are incompetent. You are incapable, and you failed at your job. And a Jim Boylan firing would and should, in my opinion, come hand in hand with a John Paxson resignation letter. And I just don't see that happening this season. Before we get to a few more mailbag topics for today, just wanted to give you a quick word from our friends at MyBookie. Are you the type of fan that knows football or basketball so well that you could choose any game and call it? Well, MyBookie is the place for you because they let you turn all of your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. Between football season, the NBA, and the start of college basketball, it's time to get off the sideline and get in on the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of person who likes to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. If you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to MyBookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. If you're tired of watching the games from the couch with nothing to gain, personally speaking, that's why I play fantasy. But MyBookie wants to get your mind off everything else and back on the game. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just use promo code LOCKEDONNBA to activate this offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Moving on with some more mailbag. The 702 says, no more excuses, guys. It's time to sit Lowry for at least a couple games. He's in the worst slump right now. I'm tired of the excuses made up for him. Everyone rips Zach apart every game, but Lowry gets a pass. He's got to be hurt or something. Something's going on at home. He just needs to get a new trainer and skills coach. If he can get a good vet to train him, I'd be more confident about him being on this team. As of right now, he's on the trade block. Thanks for checking in, and I understand your frustration. This text just, you know, FYI, came 5 or 6 days ago. So before Lowry had a 20-point game Monday against Sacramento and then, you know, a respectable but not overwhelming 15 against Memphis. So, you know, and we've certainly heard that from plenty of fans who think that the right thing to do to get Lowry out of this slump was to maybe bring him off the bench, sit him, or in some extreme cases, I've heard the suggestion of sending him to the G League to get his confidence back. Now, it is true that, you know, I have been a defender of Lowry in that I essentially all I've been trying to say is I think there's something going on that is something that we don't know about that could be a possible explanation for how poorly he's playing just because I can't believe that he is actually regressed this badly. To me, there's no way that he's regressed this badly. Some of it's a shooting slump, but there had to be something else going on. And, you know, piled on top of that, I also think that Jim Boylan is not doing Lowry any favors with this offense. And we have seen in a recent couple of games that we've even heard Zach and Lowry talk about it. Yeah, we're kind of doing our own thing a little bit more. And we're playing the two-man game that works well for us. And it's yielded some better results in a small sample size so far. I've said this before, I'll say it right now. To me, it is way too soon to consider giving up on and trading Lowry Markkanen. I still think that the ceiling is there for him to be a star caliber player in this league. If you work with him and develop him and focus on him in the proper ways, and per this texter's idea, I am not against at all, but very much in favor of the thought of bringing in a player who had a game similar to what Lowry's game can be to tutor him, to work with him. You know, I think on a recent mailbag, somebody was suggesting, let's hire Dirk Nowitzki and get him here working with Lowry. And I didn't necessarily think that was super likely, considering Dirk is a Mavs lifer. But, you know, just somebody who can work with Lowry personally, one-on-one, and help him develop his game. You know, like just last night, for instance, we saw, obviously it was nice to see Lowry start the game by knocking down his first couple of threes. We have not been accustomed to that this season. He's been shooting very poorly from downtown. But also, we saw him score inside on a nice, you know, little like baby hook. We had a mismatch, took advantage of it. But we haven't seen enough of that. Not nearly enough of that. We know he can score inside. We know he can put the ball on the floor. We know he can attack and get to the free throw line. We haven't seen enough of it. And I'm not saying that, you know, Lowry's fixed because he had a string of back-to-back games where he scored 20 and then 20 and then 15. No. And Lowry, after his fast start on Wednesday night, kind of vanished down the stretch. He hit a big three that, you know, put the Bulls up 11 late in the fourth and was kind of a nail in the coffin shot. So good for him for that. But between that and his, you know, early stretch of buckets in the first quarter, he kind of ghosted again. But to me, there is one area where we can get Lowry back on track, and it is with his rotation and Jim's minutes. And it's something that Kendall Gill harps on all the time. As, you know, a 16-year NBA vet, talking about players who need to find a rhythm and get in their rhythm, and it's hard to do that if your minutes are inconsistent. And this is a team whose coach was playing his starters essentially the same number of minutes that he was playing his five-man or six-man deep bench through the first dozen or so games of the season, even though his bench isn't all that good. You know, we've seen some recent nights where, like, the bench comes out with a plus-minus across the board of pluses, but we know that the plus-minus category of the box score could be misleading. And we know that this bench, for the most part, struggles to score. They can get some good defensive possessions, but they struggle to score unless Coby White is hot, and Coby White has more often been not hot than hot, sadly. So why is it that Lowry and Zach were only playing 25, 26, 27 minutes a game? Last night, Lowry played 29 minutes. Zach played 34, Satoransky 33, Wendell 33. Lowry played 29. He left at the four-minute mark of the first quarter and didn't check back in until the six-and-a-half-ish minute mark of the second quarter. That is a long time to sit a guy who is supposed to be one of your star starters. And then it happened again in the second half. I think that Jim is sitting Lowry for stretches that are too long and that are taking him out of the game and taking him out of his flow and his rhythm. And I'm not absolving Lowry because of this. I'm just saying I think that's a factor. And I think if you play a guy who's supposed to be a star starter more than 29 minutes, maybe we won't see Lowry disappear like this. If you play Lowry in a system that doesn't just have him standing in the corner every other possession every night, that maybe he engages a little bit more and becomes a player you can go to as a go-to scorer instead of a guy who last night only took 9 shots. We were talking about how Lowry had another decent game, or at least he started strong. He took 9 fucking shots last night. How do you expect a guy to get out of a slump and find his rhythm of a new season when you're playing him less than 30 minutes a game as a starter and he doesn't have 10 fucking shots? So yes, that is why I'm still defending Lowry and why I'm still saying it is way too soon to trade Lowry Markkanen. Because right now in this system, this season, Jim Boylan is doing him no favors. And I would like to see a coach design Lowry at least 10 or ideally a dozen looks every night. Get that man the ball. Get him in positions that he can take advantage of. For once in this rebuild, find some people that can recognize when Lowry has a mismatch and take advantage of it. We have not seen nearly enough of that. And if Zach and Lowry want to say, you know what, Jim, to hell with your system, we're going to go do our own thing, at this point, I say, go do it. Because Lowry is too talented to be wasting away like this. And yes, some of it is on him to be more aggressive and demand that he be a bigger part of this team offensively. And I want Lowry to be that confident in his game, and we don't see it right now. But I know. I'm sorry. And I get your frustration, this texter who started this topic of conversation, but I am sick of people saying we need to trade Lowry. And I mean, I don't think we should trade Zach either right now. Not yet. I think it's too soon to talk about trading either of these guys. It's too soon to talk about trading either of these guys while Jim Boylan is your head coach. And basically everyone on this team is regressing, not developing. But I understand the frustration with Lowry, and let's hope that, you know, the last couple of games are the start of a trend back in the right direction. And before we get out of here, one more. This one comes to us from the 773. If the Bulls don't beat the Warriors tonight, I am done watching them until someone gets fired. If someone has to do some historic, if someone has to do something historic, I am done unless it's a blowout. This team is too fucking good for crappy basketball. I love my team, but I also can't do this for 3 years straight. This shit is stressing. I understand it. So that was actually a text that came in leading up to the first Bulls-Warriors game, not the one that we have on deck Friday night. So we all saw what happened the first time the Bulls-Warriors played. The Warriors, who are not the Warriors, but a collection of G League players, just manhandled the Bulls. Eric Pascal manhandled the Bulls inside. You know, the interior defense has been an issue for the Bulls all season. Rebounding has been an issue for the Bulls all season. And the Bulls lost. The Bulls got beat. The Bulls got spanked by a team that coming into that game had only won one of their home games and four games total. So we'll see if the Bulls can get some revenge as they host the Warriors Friday night. And the task will be tougher because it looks like they'll have D'Angelo Russell back this time around. But, I mean, I don't fault that texter for being so fed up. And I wonder if that texter did, in fact, tune out after we lost that game to the Warriors. But, hey, we're bringing a... I almost said three. Nope, sorry. Too soon. We're bringing a two-game winning streak into this rematch against the Warriors. So let's see what Jim Boylan and co. can do to try to get this three-game winning streak. They should. There is no excuse to lose to that Warriors team twice in the span of a week. None whatsoever. We'll see what they do Friday night. That's it for today. Appreciate everybody listening to this mailbag episode and all of our episodes here at Locked On Bulls. Again, apologies for the no-show yesterday. Jordan and I were both busy running around, but we'll have another show for you tomorrow to send you into the weekend and maybe take a little closer look at their matchup with the Warriors rematch, Bulls hosting another home game Friday night. So, for my partner Jordan Malley, Matt Peck saying, you can always hit us up on that text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. On Twitter, Bulls_Peck, Jordan C. Malley, and at Locked On Bulls. Or shoot us an email, lockedonbulls@gmail.com. See you red. Be good. Peace out.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com